Measures to End the Institution of Slavery. It should be remembered that the basic source of unnatural and iniquitous treatment, which existed since time immemorial and which Islam brought to an end, was the institution of slavery. It may not be possible for people today to appreciate the intimate link between slavery and the rise of global commerce and economy. Indeed, this is the reason that Islam put a stop to the practice of slavery. Role played by slave labor in world economy. Before the inception of Islam, in fact, even after its rise, the institution of slavery prevailed over a large part of the world. On examining the history of ancient Rome, Greece, Egypt, and Persia, we find that slave labor was used as the instrument of economic progress in all of these countries. Slavery was made possible basically through two channels. One way was when countries at war with neighboring states captured the citizens of their opponents and turned them into slaves. For example, when the opportunity arose, the Romans would capture the Persians as slaves, or the other way around. Thus, each side would enslave people of the other side, expecting thereby to deal a blow to the opponent's political power. The second way to enslave people was to capture women and children from the backward parts of the world. While the first means of enslaving people was adopted at opportune occasions, the second method became a sustained practice over time. In fact, that approach to slavery continued well into the 18th century, when hordes of West Africans were brought over into the United States. Although slavery no longer exists in that country, some 20 to 30 million Americans are descendants of people who were brought as slaves. The main motivation behind slavery in advanced countries was to further their economic might through cheap slave labor. The slaves were exploited in different ways. They were assigned to work in factories or ships or any other work involving heavy manual tasks required for economic development. Similarly, slave labor was used on plantations in order to minimize production costs and to maximize profit. Prohibition of unjust forms of slavery. In both of the above-mentioned forms, slavery denied equality in treatment to a cross-section of mankind. Islam categorically prohibited both channels of enslaving people. The Holy Quran says, مَا كَانَ لِنَبِيٍّ أَن يَكُونَ لَهُ أَسْرَى حَتَّى يُثْخِنَ فِي الْأَرْضِ تُرِيدُونَ عَرَضَ الدُّنْيَا وَاللَّهُ يُرِيدُ الْآخِرَةِ وَاللَّهُ عَزِيزٌ حَكِيمٌ Surah Al-Anfal, Chapter 8, Verse 68. Meaning that, it was not lawful for any prophet before you, nor is it for you, to take prisoners without engaging in a war. If there is a war, and that too religious, prisoners can be captured in the battlefield. The condition laid down in this verse does not permit anyone to imprison the civilian population of any country where war has not been declared, nor does it permit enslaving any citizen of the opponent who has not been part of the attacking force. The imprisonment of those who are actively engaged in combat is allowed because they would otherwise go back to join forces in attack. Then Allah says in the verse, that تُرِيدُونَ عَرَضَ الدُّنْيَا, you desire the frail goods of this world. Meaning, O Muslims, do you desire to behave like other nations and enslave their people to augment your power? وَاللَّهُ يُرِيدُ الْآخِرَةِ. Nay, Allah does not want you to follow other nations. He wants to guide you to the course that is better for you in the end, and entitles you to win Allah's pleasure. God reminds Muslims that nearness to God is better than any worldly gain. And God decrees that it is better for you, that you do not take any prisoners except when war is imposed on you. This rule was strictly enforced in the early days of Islam. During the reign of Hazrat Umar radiallahu anhu, a deputation from Yemen came and complained that before the advent of Islam, they had been made into slaves without any cause by a neighboring Christian tribe. Hazrat Umar radiallahu anhu replied that though the event took place before the Muslims were in power, he would look into the case and have them set free if their complaint was borne out by facts. In contrast to this enlightened Islamic stand, the Europeans continued to use slavery for advancing their trade and agriculture until the 19th century. There is no doubt that some instances of the un-Islamic custom of slavery can be found in Islamic history, but slavery was never practiced to promote domestic industry or trade. Exhortations for freeing the prisoners of war. With respect specifically to the prisoners of war, Islam decrees, إِمَّا مَنَّمْ بَعْدُ وَإِمَّا فِدَاءً. Surah Muhammad, chapter 47, verse 5. That is, then afterwards, either release them as a favor or by taking ransom. No third option is given. The captor can either release prisoners of war out of compassion and rest assured that God is pleased with his action, or if financial hardship does not allow the captors to set prisoners of war free without recompense, then it is permissible to charge the customary ransom for release. However, what happens if neither the prisoner nor his country or family have the resources to pay ransom? Islam then allows the prisoner to pay his ransom in regular installments and thereby earn his freedom. Allah the Almighty says,
وَالَّذِينَ يَبْتَغُونَ الْكِتَابَ مِمَّا مَلَكَتْ أَيْمَانُكُمْ فَكَاتِبُوهُمْ إِنْ عَلِمْتُمْ فِيهِمْ خَيْرًا وَآتُوهُمْ مِمَّا لِلَّهِ الَّذِي آتَاكُمْ.
Surah An-Nur, chapter 24, verse 34. That is, if you have a prisoner whom you cannot release as a favor, and his relatives cannot pay the ransom, then if such a prisoner desires a deed of manumission in writing, write it for them, if you know any good in them, and give them out of the wealth of Allah which he has bestowed upon you. In situations where the slave is unable to pay the ransom, this verse enjoins that a bond be executed between a master and his slave, which binds the latter to pay the ransom in agreed installments. After this bond has been executed, the slave is immediately restored to freedom, and he is free to take up any trade that he may have an aptitude for. As a beautiful crowning gesture of goodwill, the master, out of his own assets, is directed to provide the prisoner with some capital to start him on the new venture. Out of these earnings, the master is not entitled to anything beyond the agreed fixed installment. When one considers the Islamic teachings regarding slavery, it becomes clear that Islam leaves absolutely no avenue open for any person to make another person a slave. Even when prisoners of war are taken, the captors are encouraged to set them free as a favor, or else they must be set free on payment of a reasonable ransom. If there is a prisoner who cannot ransom himself, and his friends or his government take no steps towards paying his ransom, he can gain freedom by giving an undertaking that would enable him to pay his ransom in installments out of his earnings. Destitute prisoners are even helped with some capital to enable them to earn their livelihood and gain freedom. If in the presence of such extraordinary concessions, a prisoner does not avail himself of the opportunities offered, it can only mean that he finds his bondage among Muslims more agreeable than free life among his own people. Careful consideration of these injunctions makes it obvious that Islam leaves no room for anyone to enslave another free person. The first commandment is to free the slaves as a favor, without any ransom. If that is not possible, Islam enjoins freeing the prisoners with an appropriate ransom. If a prisoner cannot arrange for the ransom from his own resources or from his relatives, he can execute a bond and would, for all practical purposes, be totally free, owing nothing more than the agreed installment. The slave who stabbed and martyred Hazrat Umar radiallahu anhu was himself set free according to the ransom guidelines given above. One day, the slave approached the Muslim who he lived with and proposed payment of a fixed installment of ransom out of his income in exchange for his freedom. A contract was signed that mandated the slave to earn his freedom by paying the agreed installments. However, one day he complained to the Khalifa that his installment was too heavy and that it should be reduced. On investigation, Hazrat Umar radiallahu anhu found that the man's income was many times greater than the agreed installment. His application was therefore rejected, which made him furious. He thought that justice had been denied to him on racial grounds, as he was a Persian while his former master was an Arab. So the next day he stabbed Hazrat Umar radiallahu anhu with a dagger, who was martyred because of his wounds. To sum up, Islam gives a right to any prisoner of war to gain his freedom by paying ransom in cash or in agreed installments. If he is then unable to embark upon an economic activity for lack of capital, the master or the government is enjoined to assist him in procuring the needed funds to gain his freedom. Fair treatment of prisoners. Islam instructs that, when working at the master's home, a prisoner of war must not be given tasks beyond his capacity. If the task is too onerous for the prisoner to do by himself, the master should help him. In any case, he must not be abused. If he is a freedman, working for wages, he should be paid promptly. If the master happens to physically hit a freedman, he has the right to lodge a petition with qaza, the Islamic judicial system, and sue his master for compensation. A servant who has not yet been freed can also go to the court of law for physical abuse. If the complaint is justified, the courts are instructed in such cases to determine that the master is not fit to keep the prisoner and grant him freedom. A person possessing prisoners is instructed to feed them the same food as he eats and to clothe them in the same manner that he clothes himself. It is no wonder that many prisoners of war in Muslim hands refused to go back to their own people. They felt that if they went back home, they might not get the same quality of food as they got as prisoners, and the quality of life would actually be worse. Thus, when Muslims became rulers, prisoners of war often refused to return home, even though they were offered payment of their ransom to gain their freedom. This was so because they realized that their life was more comfortable as slaves than as free men back home. If, under such circumstances, a few men chose to remain slaves, who may object? Slavery and economics. Although the subject of my address today is not slavery, economics and slavery are inextricably woven together in human history. The development of Siberian Russia was dependent on the work of serfs and political prisoners. Similarly, the United States of America developed because of the hard work of millions of Africans brought across from West Africa. America today takes pride in its wealth and economic might, but it owes a debt of gratitude to the slaves. Similarly, Greek and Roman history tells us that their commerce and industry was for the most part based on slave labor. It is same for ancient Egypt. The economic development in France and Spain 200 or 300 years ago was also mainly due to slave labor. Thus, slavery and world economy are intertwined in history no matter where we look. But Islam put a ban on this institution from its inception and pronounced that the development achieved thereby could not be considered moral or praiseworthy.